Okay, the council will come to order. Carla, please call the roll.
Novick?
Here.
Fritz?
Here. I apologize for being late. I was out on city business.
Fish, Hales, Saltzman.
Here. Okay, could you please read item 1009 and 1010?
Consider the proposal of Madeline Kovacs and the recommendation from the hearings officer for approval to change the comprehensive plan map designation from high-density single-dwelling residential to townhouse multi-dwelling residential, and the zoning map designation from R5 to R3 for a property at 4736 to 4752 Northeast Going Street, LU16133809CPZC, and item 110, amend the comprehensive plan map designation and amend the zoning map for a property at 4736 through 4752 Northeast Going Street at the request of Madeline Kovacs, LU16133809CPZC.
Okay, City Attorney, do you have any guidance for us?
Thank you, Commissioner Saltzman. I have several announcements I'm required by state law to make that concern the kind of hearing we're having today, the order of testimony, and the scope of testimony. First, as to the kind of hearing, this is an evidentiary hearing, which means that you may submit new evidence to the council in support of your arguments. In terms of the order of testimony, it will be the council will hear testimony as follows. We'll begin with a staff report by BDS staff for approximately 10 minutes. Following the staff report, the council will hear from the interested persons in the following order. The applicant will go first and will have 15 minutes to address the council. After the applicant, the council will hear from individuals or organizations who support the applicant's proposal. Each person will have 3 minutes to speak. Next, the council will hear from persons or organizations who oppose the applicant's proposal. Again, each person will have 3 minutes. If there was testimony in opposition to the applicant's proposal, the applicant will have 5 additional minutes to rebut testimony given in opposition to the proposal. The council may then close the hearing and deliberate. Because the accompanying ordinance today is a non-emergency ordinance, it will pass to a second reading. The council may make amendments to the ordinance and findings or direct staff to return with amendments if appropriate. Finally, a few guidelines for giving testimony. First, any letters or documents you wish to become part of the record should be given to the council clerk after you testify. Similarly, the original or a copy of any slides, photographs, drawings, maps, videos, or other items you show to the council during your testimony, including PowerPoint presentations, should be given to the council clerk to make sure they become part of the record. Second, testimony must be directed toward the approval criteria. Any testimony, arguments, and evidence you present must focus on the applicable approval criteria for this land use review or other criteria that you believe are applicable, whether from the comprehensive plan or the zoning code. The BDS staff will identify the applicable approval criteria as part of their staff report to the council. Third, you must raise any issue clearly enough to give the council and the parties an opportunity to respond to the issue. If you don't, you'll be precluded from appealing to the Land Use Board of Appeals based on that issue. Finally, if the applicant fails to raise constitutional or other issues relating to proposed conditions of approval with enough specificity to allow the council to respond, the applicant will be precluded from bringing an action for damages in circuit court. And that concludes the opening announcements I need to make.
Okay, thank you. Do any members of the council wish to declare a conflict of interest? Seeing none. Any members of council wish to declare ex parte contacts or information gathered outside of the hearing today? No? Okay. And have any members of council made any visits to the site involved in this matter? Okay, great. So we'll start out with the staff report from Bureau of Development Services. Matt? Come on up.
Good afternoon. My name is Matt Wickstrom. I'm with the Bureau of Development Services Land Use Services section. As the city attorney noted, we're here to talk about a comprehensive plan map zoning map amendment at 4736 through 4752 Northeast Going Street. And as the council clerk noted, the applicant requests to change, as far as the proposal goes, the applicant requests to change the comprehensive plan map and zoning map designations for two lots on Northeast Going Street from R5, which is residential 5,000, to R3, which is residential 3,000. This is a copy of the existing zoning map. You'll see the two lots shaded in sort of more the darker red adjacent to Northeast Going Street are considered the site. They're 39,200 square feet in area together, and each lot's developed with a single dwelling home. The applicant also owns a lot to the south of these two lots, which is already in the R3 zone and therefore isn't part of the zone change proposal today. This is a copy of the proposed zoning. You'll see the zoning map moves to include the two lots abutting Northeast Going Street within the R3 zone. It's important to note, too, that this change in zoning has been already approved by City Council as part of the comprehensive plan update. However, that's not expected to go into effect until January 2018. This is an aerial view of the site. I have additional vicinity photos at the end of the presentation that if you want to examine the surroundings in more detail, we can do so. But I'll just give you a tour based on the aerial photo. So right here, I'm circling the site that's part of this proposal, developed with two single-dwelling homes. To the south here is the lot also owned by the property owner, Eli Spivak. Across the street, you've got what's called Cully Grove. This is a planned unit development, completed by the property owner. It's in the R5 zone. However, it went through what's called a planned unit development to allow multiple houses on one lot, which is in some ways similar to what the property owner's ultimate proposal is for this site that we're discussing today. To the east and the west of these three lots here, well, actually these four, they're developed with single-dwelling homes. On the corner here of Northeast Going and Northeast 47th Avenue, we've got a non-conforming recycling business in a residential zone. To the south of the site here, where the zoning's R3, is apartment development. So staff findings, and I'll get to this later, found that what's proposed for this site and with this planned unit development across the street creates a bridge between the multi-dwelling development to the south and then the planned unit development to the north. And this is only for illustrative purposes. We're not approving a site plan as part of this review. However, this is how the applicant envisions to develop the property. It's with a series of 1, 2, and 3 dwelling unit structures, rather smaller in nature, ranging from about 700 square feet in dwelling units to the largest being 1,500 square feet. There is a common, one of the units that's proposed is a common house that could be shared by owners or residents of the other homes in case they had visitors or that type of thing. There's a pathway running through. There's community gardens, which are placed up against adjacent to a neighbor to the west. And then there's surface parking as well. And then it's also important to note that one of the three existing houses on the lots owned by the property owner, this one here, which isn't part of the zone change, is proposed to remain.
Are those trees shown? Are they trees to remain?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thanks. This is a summary of public testimony received throughout the process. In response to the notice of proposal that was sent out, three letters of support were received. The topics addressed in those letters expressed support for the additional housing that would be provided as part of this proposal. There's also a proposal and a condition of approval related to three of the dwelling units being affordable. And then there was a letter of support written by the Cully Association of Neighbors, which was actually received as part of the application, not in response to the notice of proposal. Seven letters in opposition were received in response to the notice of proposal. A main theme that ran through those letters was a desire to protect the rural character of this area. The one thing to point out about that is the site as it is, and this includes Mr. Spivak, the other R3 zone lot, which he owns to the south, through a plan development review, could be developed with 18 dwelling units right now. The way he's envisioning developing it, it would be with 23 dwelling units. So we're not talking a huge departure from what would be allowed by right through a review. There was concerns about parking and whether adequate parking was provided. There were concerns about traffic and notations that the Cully Grove development across the street had increased traffic to an extent. There were statements saying that the property should just be developed under the current zoning without asking for any sort of change. And then there was a concern expressed that the zoning pattern wouldn't be consistent. And then at the June 27th, 2016 public hearing with the hearings officer, testimony of a similar nature was received, both in support and in opposition. The approval criteria for this review are 33810050, the comprehensive plan map amendment approval criteria, and then 33855050, the zoning map amendment approval criteria. The hearings officer found that the proposal is on balance equally or more supportive of the comprehensive plan. The proposal provides more opportunities for housing and housing types. Three dwelling units will be affordable, and the proposal is consistent with the transportation policies and objectives, and the overall project is consistent with the surrounding development pattern in the area. As far as the zoning map amendment findings go, the proposal meets the approval criteria for base zone changes. The proposed zoning essentially matches the comprehensive plan designation that's proposed for the site. The water supply and capacity can support the uses that are allowed. Police and fire are capable of supporting the uses allowed. The proposed sanitary waste and stormwater disposal are acceptable to the Bureau of Environmental Services. And the transportation system and facilities are capable of supporting the uses allowed. Just a couple staff notes. Following conversations with the Portland Housing Bureau, the condition of approval related to affordability that was included in the hearings officer's recommendation was modified slightly so that it could be enforced. Carl Dinkelspiel from the Portland Housing Bureau is here if you'd like to talk about that condition more. And over the course of the land use review, the applicant took a different job, and so now Eli Spivak, the property owner, has requested to become the applicant. So in summary, the hearings officer's recommendation was approval of the comprehensive plan amendment to change the designation of the comprehensive plan map designation of the site from high-density single-dwelling residential to townhouse multi-dwelling residential, and to change the zoning to approve a zoning map amendment to change the zoning of the site from R5, which is residential 5,000, to R3, which is residential 3,000. And it's important to note that basically this site is going from one of the most intense single dwelling residential designations other than R2.5. to the least intense multi-dwelling residential designations. And that's essentially so the applicant can develop the site in the courtyard fashion that he's proposing to. Two conditions of approval were included. One is that dwelling units on the site are limited to 1, 2, and 3 unit structure types. This is so to ensure that the development pattern is consistent with the surrounding area and that a large single building apartment was not placed upon the site. And then The last condition of approval is that three dwelling units must be affordable, and that would be through Proud Ground or a similar type organization that provides homeownership opportunities for families below 80% median family income.
Excellent timing. That's very you mentioned in the presentation that we approved this as a comprehensive plan change in the comprehensive plan process. What did we approve for the surrounding area in that?
Only the site.
Was the, and do you, I don't know if you were involved. Was there any decision discussion during the project?
We didn't. We were unable to find any discussion regarding the council's deliberations.
So presumably that was because the property owner had requested it as part of the comp plan process as well.
You're absolutely correct.
Thank you.
Any further questions for Matt? Okay. Thank you, Matt.
Thanks.
Now we'll hear from the applicant, Mr. Spivak.
Do they get to see it too?
They have screens.
Welcome. If you could just give us your name, and then you have 10 minutes.
Thank you. My name is Eli Spivak. I'm the developer of this property. I live across the street at 4757 Northeast Going Street in the Cully Grove community that was mentioned here. It's a development that's about 3 years old. It's a wonderful spot. It was developed through a very difficult plan development process. And as wonderful as it is not affordable. There's 16 homes there, not one first-time home buyer. And the homes sold at $350. Now they're probably worth $80 more than that right now. So my interest has been to try and serve lower-income residents in smaller units. And I was able to purchase one of the properties as part of this development that I was renting in while we were building that development, and came up and was able to get a couple other properties, as you've seen. And this unit mix would have 7 1,500-square-foot homes, 4 1,200-square-foot homes, 7 800-square-foot homes, and 3 640-square-foot homes. So this is really hitting smaller housing, and therefore the price points will be more in the upper 200s to 300s, and the largest ones will be the low 400s, is what I'm expecting. Meanwhile, in this neighborhood around the corner, a project just went on a 50 by 100-foot lot, house sold for $715,000. And right next door to this site, in fact, since the hearing, a property has been sold or is in escrow. And I spoke with the developer. This is immediately east of the property, where he will take down the house and build a house in the mid-$700,000 range. And Cully is not used to that. And I hope that's not the direction that the neighborhood goes. And I've been offered weekly people trying to buy this property from me. So my interest is to try and figure out a way to achieve some affordability by reducing home sizes, and to have a nice community layout. So you've got the site plan in front of you. The red ones are 800 square feet, the yellows are 1,500, and the oranges are 800. And the common house that would be provided is purple, sort of attached to the properties together. We'll have community gardens, picnic area, a sauna, and some common areas. And based on precedent at Cully Grove across the street, those don't just get used by residents. Those are neighborhood association meetings, PTA gatherings. They have happy hours from regular teachers down the street, and it gets used by the community significantly. Tree preservation, I appreciate the question about the trees. This is really designed around preserving that great grove of fir trees there. And there's the other magnificent tree on site is facing on 47th. It's not on this property area, but it's almost a 38-inch oak tree that I'm going to have to petition PBOT to wiggle the sidewalk around, although they should require me to do that. We have a letter of support from the Neighborhood Association. We have a letter of support also from the immediate resident to the west of the project, and Michael Beach, who owns the property that's cornered on two sides by the property, spoke out opposed, but we also had a long sit-down chat since then, and we're in much better shape. He would have been here if he were as pissed as he was back then, but there's some nice linkages between where I got buildings that will not actually shade out parts of his yard that he's most concerned about. The traffic study shows that by switching from single-family homes, 8 of which could be built, to apartments, which have fewer trip totals, you get one additional trip. So there will be more traffic, certainly, than what there is currently with 2 single-family homes, but compared to what's allowed under the base zone, which is the consideration here, it's a nominal impact. On the
Mr. Spivak?
Yes.
Could you just maybe explain why it is that smaller homes, multifamily homes generate fewer trips than single family homes?
I'm not sure I can explain that. I think that they're much smaller. I mean, average new single family homes are 2,600 square feet in Portland, and the largest units here are 1,500. So for this situation, I can smaller homes, fewer occupants, fewer trips. In terms of why the parking tables are done that way, I can't speak to that.
Okay.
And I'll let my transportation engineer go, too. Sorry.
Thanks.
Couple other notes. We will be meeting parking standards for the street. This is not within 500 feet of transit, so we'll have abundance parking space per unit, reduced somewhat for extra bike parking. There's been some concern expressed about the intersection of 47th and Prescott, which is a dangerous intersection, and there is in improvements already slated to go all the way along Prescott Street through this stretch to do sidewalks, and the city is seeing if they can include in that pedestrian refuges and crosswalks at that intersection. If not, it's in a future transportation package that would take a few more years to get completed. But that's already underway with the city. The massing of the homes that we're building here, because they're smaller, is quite a bit less than what 8 single-family homes would be. So when I say that, I mean the floor area of what we're building is a lot less than what current zoning would propose. What would typically be built under current zoning. The partnership with Proud Ground is to ensure that, although most of the units will be market rate, we have three of them that would be permanently affordable. And the way the condition, just to be honest about it, the condition is that if the city has no participation in that process, then one unit will be permanently affordable. That's me leaving $130,000 on the table. If the city matches some funds, I'm putting it with some CDBG funds or something like that, then the number, it becomes three. So this is my attempt at some voluntary inclusionary zoning on the project and to make sure that this neighborhood has some, not just units at the 300 range, but some units at the 200, 220 range, which is more affordable and permanently affordable. The standards that the city is supposed to judge us against have to do with the zoning code and the comp plan, and this would provide higher population density within shooting distance of 42nd. I shouldn't say shooting distance. Easy walking distance of the commercial strip to help vitalize that corridor. And the impact on parking, I think, should be minimal because we're providing so much off-street. That actually makes the site planning fairly challenging. And in terms of transit, although there's no transit right now, the transit line Y is designated to go down Prescott within half block of this site. I've asked TriMet how long that might take. They say 5-plus years, but it's on their master plan map today. And I think that I've got time, but I don't need to take all the time that I've been given. And if I don't see any notes here, I've missed. So one moment here. I think I will just say that my hope through this project, and I said in terms of the reason why I did request that this be changed to R3 zoning before I was on the commission, if anyone cares about that, but there was a intention to provide the flexibility of layout and to let me do smaller clustered housing. My hope is that going forward, developers would not have to go through this process if they want to build smaller units, and there might be some cottage zoning adopted so you can get smaller units and get a few more of them by right. But this is like the zoning way of achieving that. And I'll leave it at that.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Questions? So I just wanted to ask, so the 800 square foot homes, is that like a two-bedroom home? Or?
Yes.
Okay. And those would be in the 220,000?
The 220, those actually will probably be a little over 300.
Really?
I've got some 640 square footers in there.
Oh.
That are the blue ones on your map, little things. They're actually a slightly larger version of what I built before, and people love that one. And the land trust units are actually more likely to be the smaller three-bedroom units because it has to do with the way the property tax exemption works, that they can get that for a three-bedroom unit but not for a two-bedroom unit. So it's more likely that that's the land trust one.
Okay, no further questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll now hear from supporters of the applicant who wish to testify? Do we have anybody wishing to testify?
I show four people signed up. The first three, please come on up, are Cameron Harrington, Jessica Arvalo, and Bruce Nelson. Oh, what's your name?
Bruce, okay.
So the just the two?
Oh, David Sweet. Then.
Oh, okay, David. Okay, come on up. And, well, so you each have 3 minutes, and you just need to give us your name, and we'll start with you, Cameron.
Thank you, Commissioners. I'm here on behalf of Living Cully. We are very supportive of this proposal primarily because it adds permanently affordable housing in the Cully neighborhood, which is a neighborhood that does not have tax increment financing that can be used to subsidize permanently affordable housing. And so to have a developer that is voluntarily willing to add permanently affordable homes is a great thing in the neighborhood, and we fully support it. Doing so completely supports the anti-displacement and affordable housing goals that council just adopted in the new comprehensive plan, and also supports the community-defined goals around increasing the neighborhood stock of permanently affordable homes. It's important to point out, however, that this project highlights the limits of affordable housing development without public subsidy. The only way that the developer in this case was able or willing to add permanently affordable homes is through increasing the allowed density with this zone change, and then, as he said, leaving some money on the table, and in effect internally subsidizing a lower sales price for a few of those units with the sales price of the market rate units. We would love to see public subsidy or incentives be brought to bear to make this kind of mixed income development more feasible for other developers. We're very supportive of the innovative approval criteria for this zone change of requiring affordable units in exchange for a zone change, and we'd like to see how that can be expanded in other instances where developers are seeking a zone change. And I look forward to working with the council on how public subsidies such as the new construction excise tax and potentially a rethinking of how tax increment financing can be used as an affordable housing funding tool, and how those might be able to support developers such as Mr. Spivak, who would like to contribute to affordable housing development.
Thank you. Pam, if you could just give us your name, you have 3 minutes.
My name is Jessica Arevalo, and I am a homeowner of Proud Ground, and I am also the cross-cultural community outreach coordinator for the organization. Proud Ground is a nonprofit that helps households of modest means buy homes at affordable prices. We have partner with Eli Spivak and Orange Plot on a past condo development, and are currently working together on his Mason Street townhome in the Cully neighborhood, where earlier on Eli committed to making 3 homes permanently affordable. I am here to express our support to include permanently affordable units at the Camp Cully in a neighborhood with limited public funding to support homeownership. This is no easy task, and Eli has truly made an investment and put his money where his mouth is to make affordable homeownership opportunity a reality. He did this first at the Mason Street and then once again with the planned units at Camp Cully. These homes will create opportunity for hardworking families from the modest, for modest means, and for the most diverse neighborhood in the state to become homeowners, and this would not be possible without Eli's financial commitment. At Proud Ground, we work to help families work to prepare families of modest means for homeownership, especially families of color. These families are coping with a difficult rental environment, and they are under more and more stress with the rising costs and threats of eviction. In fact, we recently completed a research that shows that in 2000 through 2014, rents in the Portland region increased by 79%. And the cost of a single-family home increased by 77%. Median family incomes in the area, however, did not keep up with the pace, increasing only 29% during the same period. That report also goes on to document the positive impact of homeownership has on the lives of families, such as anchoring children in the neighborhood schools, improving health and employment outcomes, and increasing community involvement. But these benefits are not enjoyed by many households due to the current market trends. Further, in 2013, only 7.3% of homes sold in the Portland region would have actually been affordable to middle-income households. Of those homes, 34% were actually sold to cash buyers. And so the Portland housing market has left many families behind. Although I am here today mainly to support the permanently affordable units proposed at Camp Cali, would also provide much-needed inventory of smaller homes, even at the market price points. These smaller homes will provide more options for households with more limited purchasing options in the Portland area. Portland desperately needs development like Camp Cali, and Pratt Grant is happy to speak in today's support on this important project. Thank you.
Mr. Sweet, just give us your name, and you have 3 minutes.
Thank you. Commissioners, my name is David Sweet, and I'm the Land Use Transportation Chair for the Cali Association of Neighbors. As Matt pointed out, we did write a letter in support of this project, and what's being handed out to you right now is our inclusive Cully policy, which we adopted this spring. And our support of this project was an easy call for us because it checks off almost half the items on our adopted inclusive Cully policy, including encouraged development of permanently affordable housing in Cully, encourage development of workforce housing in Cully, encourage moderately priced individual home ownership, encourage alternative designs for infill, such as accessory dwelling units, small house cottage clusters, and other strategies to promote more affordable market rate infill housing, and support greater density of development in areas that have good access to transit and other services. Cully neighborhood, as you know, is fighting a battle against displacement. We are a neighborhood that is very much at risk of that, and we're very excited at this model coming into our neighborhood and demonstrating the possibility of smaller, more affordable market rate units, as well as permanently affordable units. This is a real boon to our neighborhood. This is exactly the kind of development we hope to see. And speaking as a neighbor of the property, I live at the Cully Grove community across the street. I say I welcome this development. It will add vibrancy to our neighborhood. It will encourage continued economic diversity in our neighborhood and further support the burgeoning neighborhood centers on Cully Boulevard and 42nd Avenue. So I really urge you to approve this zone change and comprehensive plan amendment. Moreover, let me echo Eli in encouraging that policies that will encourage this kind of development in single-family zones throughout the city. The council will have an opportunity to weigh in on this coming up soon. I am serving on the Residential Infill Project Stakeholder Advisory Committee, and proposals to allow developments like this one in single-family zones throughout the city will greatly help us to prevent displacement and create market-rate housing that's much more affordable for people in Portland. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you all. Next, we'll hear from opponents of the application, which we have one person.
Yes, Bruce Nelson.
Welcome. If you just give us your name, you have 3 minutes.
My name is Bruce Nelson. I live about 300 feet to the east of where this development is proposed. On the south side of Going Street, where this is going to occur, there are 15 properties. Of those, one is a commercial, grandfathered in from when it was county property. All the remaining 14 are R5. Of those properties, six of them are currently half acre that have not been subdivided. Of the properties that have been subdivided, they usually only have at most two houses. The zone change from an R5 to an R3, you're going to end up having a little bit of an island, two properties that are R3 that will have a different type of development than any other development on the south side of Going Street. And I would not say that this is even comparable to the Cully Grove development because those houses are much bigger. So for the Matt to say that there's comparable development in the area, I don't see that that is true. Let's see. The property just to the east of the proposed development, which is now, I think, owned by Portland Development Company, and Eli referred to them. What is to stop them when you approve the zone change here to decide they want to do a zone change there? That's actually my big concern. What is the precedent in this setting by allowing this development? Why shouldn't somebody else snap up the rest of the properties on Going Street on the south side that are oversized properties, half acres, if they haven't been or haven't been subdivided? And since they all in their backyards abut R3 properties on Prescott, say, we want to put in R3s there. Now, it's ironic that the people who are going to be attracted to Eli's development and to Cully Grove, what they like about the neighborhood is the sense of space, the sense of big trees. That will disappear in years from now because of this smaller housing, which I agree it's good, it's more affordable. I'm not sure low-income people are going to be buying houses $250,000 to $320,000. Affordability in one unit is nice, but this is not about this. This is about changing the character of this particular street. My question is, maybe some of you live in properties that are zoned currently R5. Now, what is different about this situation that will allow your neighbor to perhaps suggest they would like to get an R3 there? Because of the precedent that was set here. What is it that makes R5 property suitable in one area to be switched to R3 and not in another area? So I would ask you to consider that. So thank you very much.
Well, Mr. President, since there's only one opponent, isn't he the principal opponent, gets a little more time, if you want to?
I guess you're right.
Was there anything else you wanted to add?
Yeah. Oh, well, you have up to 50. You have an extra 12 minutes if you need them.
Oh, boy. Oh, let's see. I would... My concern, I mean, I've been on the street since 1978. We were part of the county, and then we were taken into the city. Obviously, there are changes that occur, and that's okay. But the real concern for me is... The R3 that Eli was able to get in somehow, I'm not sure if that's widely known in the neighborhood, that property is already slated for an R3, and yet you look every place to the north of there, and it's R5 or R7. And it's weird having an island of R3s in an R5 zone. And I just don't know where you draw the line. I'm not a lawyer, but that is worrisome. It is true, I will be dead by the time this whole Going Street, that's a five-block strip with no cross streets between 47th and 52nd. My conjecture is that because of the allowance of this R3 here, that opens the door. The next developer may not be as conscientious as Eli is. And they say, well, we want an R3, you gave it to them. So that's my concern. I appreciate the smaller size dwellings. That will be nice for a lot of double income folks who are probably making somewhere between $40,000 and $60,000. That's not low-income folks. So the neighborhood is changing. I admit it. I still love the neighborhood. But I don't understand why you're allowing an R3 there. I really don't allow that. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, the applicant is entitled to a five-minute rebuttal.
Thank you. The interest list we have for homes there, it's well over 200 people. Many of them are includes teachers at the school down the street, includes teachers at the daycare around the corner, includes parents, low-income parents of my daughter's classmates at Rigler Elementary down the street. I think Bruce is exactly right that this area will get redeveloped, and the question is what it's going to get redeveloped with. And the precedent is already being clearly stated by what's happened around the corner and what's happening next door to this property, houses selling in the 700,000s. And I wish that we could see, I did a project with Proud Ground a few years ago, Woolsey Corner, where we hit two- and three-bedroom units for $90,000 to $120,000. That was thanks to a density transfer, part of New Columbia, and some funding from a TIF district. In Coley, those resources don't exist, and largely the zoning doesn't exist. And so this is an attempt to try and provide some housing that's a lot less expensive than those $750,000 homes that people can afford to buy, and so we can have a neighborhood where people can afford to live there who also work in the neighborhood. And there's some neighborhoods of Portland where that's much less the case. We have a chance in Coley to try and do it, and that's my hope through this development. And in terms of the sizing, the character of the neighborhood, yes, right now it's a very low-developed neighborhood. But if you look at what can be built under current zoning on that site, it's 2,600-square-foot average-size homes. That's a lot more square footage than what I'm proposing here. And the question we have is what kind of income distribution we're going to have on the street. I mean, the house size is going to, the total floor area of building is very similar between R5 and R3. I mean, it's and what I'm doing is actually less, but I think that in terms of the precedent, it's kind of a fair question. It's not easy going through a zone change comp plan process. I'm doing that because I'm impatient. I don't want to wait till the city gets around to doing the comp plan in however many years that is. And also because I've got a whole acre here. There's some efficiencies of scales of going through this process. I know that the developer who's going to pick up a third of an acre site is not going to go through this process to seek a comp plan zone change. And so I think that there's little to fear about people taking this precedent to redevelop the side of the street. I think there's a greater thing to fear about these properties being snapped up and being built out with $700,000 homes that are not affordable to anyone who, or not many people who live in the neighborhood. So I will leave it at that. Thank you.
I have a question. Are there sidewalks on the frontage of your property on both streets?
There are no, and we will be required to do half street improvements on Going Street. It'll be a full half street improvement it's not subject to this review, but on around the corner on 47th, there's already a curb, so we'll have to do a sidewalk in addition to it. And we at Coley Grove, across the street from this, we already did do sidewalks, half street improvements, and curb, and we'll have to mimic that on this side of the street.
So it won't get waived with the problem street. Kruger is shaking his head no, so that's good.
So you can answer that for me.
So you are going to put the sidewalks in?
Yes.
Good, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Any further questions for staff? So, Catherine, I just want to check, did we vote on the hearings officer recommendation today and then the zone change next second reading, or do we vote on both of them at a subsequent date?
I think it makes the most sense to vote on them together to carry them both forward to the second reading of the ordinance and vote on them both at the same time, because the hearings officer's recommendation constitutes the findings to support the zone change ordinance.
Okay, but the evidentiary record is now closed.
Yes, you can close the evidentiary record.
Okay, and do we need to set a special date for the second readings, or can they just go to next week?
I think.
Check with Carla on that.
Yeah. Well, perhaps we should clarify. I'm going to support the hearings officer's decision, so I don't see any changes to the findings. I didn't hear anything that was raised that hadn't been raised before. And the reason I'm going to support it is because of the specific site, having had a lot of discussion, and I think the site plan does look very attractive, even though however many units there are, there's a lot of open space. They're keeping the trees, and they've got the common areas and the parking, which is adequate, in my opinion. In fact, I'm glad to see it. So I really appreciate your concerns, Mr. Nelson. I think on this particular site that there has been a lot of good work, and it's maybe part of the experiment of how do we keep Cully and other neighborhoods affordable to at least teachers. I mean that, yes, $60,000 isn't especially low income, but it's still challenging for people with that income to buy any homes at all in Portland. So I think we do need to, especially when we've got a developer who's trying to do the right thing and has had some experience, I think it's going to also give us some input into how we set up the inclusionary zoning issues. So that's going to be my motion next week, is to approve the hearings officer's decision.
So we will do this next week then? Nothing?
They need a time certain assigned to the. Okay, so they'll be on the regular agenda under Commissioner Saltzman then.
Okay.
Morning or afternoon?
Morning.
Okay, so next Wednesday.
Can you do that with the new timing of getting things done?
That's why we changed it. So,
excellent,
so we
good.
Can do our Thursdays.
Thank you, Carla.
Yes, you're welcome. Thank you.
Just so you know, we've been working on how can we get the agenda out earlier, but also that has in the past tripped us up on Thursday afternoons. So thank you.
Okay, so this will be decided next Wednesday. And thank you all for being here. And we stand adjourned.
Good. You saw the Northwest Examiner is like all in support of Terminal 1.
Oh, really?
The issue, editorial and story.
Far out. No, I did not.